then we find ourselves doing wrong again. And then we go through that cycle, and it's a continuous cycle. Some call it a roller coaster Christianity. We're up and down and all around, right? And we don't stay consistent in that area the way we should in our lives. Now, what is interesting is, have you ever thought about this? What has worked for us to do right is what we need to continue to do. But how often do we start doing what we're supposed to be doing, start doing the things we're told to do, and it works, and we're excited about it? But then over a course of time, we decide we're going to go back to our old ways. And then we're shocked by going back to our old ways what the result is. But we know what the result's going to be. And then we go, okay, I got to get back to doing it this way. And we start doing it that way again. And man, the results are great. We see God blessing. We see working. We see all that's happening. But then over a course of time, what do we do again? We go back to doing it the way we used to. And all of a sudden, now we're back in the same trap, the same area. And now we find ourselves in the same situation. Now, wouldn't you think we would get it? I'm talking to myself just as much as I'm talking to you. Wouldn't we think we would just get it? Doesn't it make sense to us that we should just understand this and know that, hey, I got to stay doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and that works. God's way always works. When I do it my way, it doesn't work. It sounds simple, but it's hard for us to do. In Judges 3, remember, they did right for almost 40 years. Then the judge passed on. It was gone. They didn't have the leadership, if you will. They didn't have the extra support that they needed. And so what did Israel do again? Well, we started looking at this last time. What did Israel start doing? In the children, verse 12, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel because they have done evil in the sight of the Lord. Remember, we ended with this thought. We're going to get into the word that I left you. If you remember, I left you with a word to consider. But here's what happened is the Lord strengthened Eglon, the enemy king. Now, we talked about that, right? Why would God strengthen the enemy? Why would God give power? Why would God help the enemy? Well, to get a hold of Israel, to wake up. Why does God allow the wicked to be able to do things in our world today? To wake us up. Now, I want to hit some things a little bit this morning. And I'm praying about this down the road, even in a Sunday morning message to consider. But I want us to look today, what is happening even with Russia? What is happening with some of the things that are happening? Could it be the Lord strengthening them to be able to be used to wake up individuals to what is going on? Are we not getting close to the end times? Now, we are closer today than we were last year. I can say that truthfully. Easily, right? But look at some things. What does the Bible say about the last days? So you see that? There's going to be those joining forces to come against Israel. We're going to be in perilous times. There's going to be wars. There's going to be trials and tribulations and rumors of war and pestilence, and there's going to be a lack of commitment. There's going to be a lack of those wanting teaching and growing and maturing. Wow. Does it not sound like where we're at today? We're getting, I believe, close. Now, I'm not going to put a time. No man knows the hour. No man knows. We know that in Scripture. But I can truthfully say, I believe it's coming soon. Now, Paul thought that too, right? We can look back in the New Testament. Paul believed the Lord was coming back very soon. I believe we're closer today than Paul was. Did you get that? I believe we're closer today than Paul was, right? And I believe it could be soon. We're seeing all this. Now, we didn't live during Paul's time. We didn't live during that. They saw things too, and there was rumors of war, and there's a lot of things. So what I say with that is we got to live as if the Lord's coming back tomorrow. But we also have to live in the sense that the Lord might not come back for 1,000 years. What do you mean by that? Well, sometimes we say, well, if the Lord's coming back tomorrow, then I might as well not care and might as well not do anything. I might as well just go. No, but the Lord could come back tomorrow. But we don't know when it is, so I got to make every day count that I have. That I have. And I got to live for him. Now, God strengthens him. God gives him this. Now, let's pick up in verse number 13. And he gathered unto him the children of Amnon and Amalek and went and smote Israel and possessed the city of palm trees. Now, I want to talk about a few things in this verse. We asked you about the word smote. Remember last week at the end I said, we're going to talk about the word smote. Did anyone look that word up? Or if you have your devices, look up, what does that word smote mean? Anyone have an idea? What does that word smote? They smote Israel. Yeah, it means to strike. It means to hit. It means to beat. It means to slay. It means to kill. God strengthened them to come against them. And then in verse 13, and gathered him the children of Amnon and Amalek and went and smote Israel. What were they going to do to Israel? What was the purpose of the wicked king grabbing? And you see, even other enemies came together. Isn't that interesting? They came together. He gathered other enemies together. Those that he didn't always get along with himself. He gathered them all together to go against Israel, not just to go and sing Kumbaya. He went to go smote them. Yeah, to slay, even if you look it up, it does have the idea of the killing, of bringing torture to, it's basically they were going to allow anything, they were going to do anything they could to destroy Israel. That's the concept. That's the whole concept there, is get this, these pagan armies did not come for a friendly picnic, they came to destroy Israel. Israel is in a fight for its very existence. Their goal was to do away with Israel. The armies, those that were coming against them, did not want Israel to succeed, and they wanted to destroy Israel. Now, it's interesting. We wake up in a battle every day, don't we? We wake up in a serious battle. We're in a fight for our lives every day, are we not? Who wants to destroy us? Satan. Do you think Satan wants to have a picnic with us? Do you think Satan wants to hold our hands and sing Kumbaya? Only if he could get us to drink Kool-Aid, yeah. What does he want us to do? He wants to destroy us. Now, as a believer, we cannot lose our salvation. We understand that, right? He cannot take away that, but what can he do in our lives? Anyone think about it for a minute. What can the devil do to our lives? He can cast out. He can slay us. He can smote us. He can oppress us. He can't possess us, but he can oppress us. How does he oppress us? What does that mean? We've talked about it before, but what does it mean to oppress? Keep down? Not let you grow? Kind of heavy burden weighing you down? What's that? Holds you back. And it feels like you're tied to something and something just kind of, woo. Yeah, I believe lies, and we even talked about that back in Ephesians a couple weeks ago, the lies of the devil, fear. And what the devil does by oppressing you is to get you down into a state where you're almost depressed. Okay, a lot of oppression. We talked about the different types of oppression, right? And how we gave some of those. But you know what all that usually leads to? Even the fear, the doubt, the feeling heavy weight. It leads to a form of depression in that. Because it gets you to a place that you think there's no way that you can have victory. Now, I want you to think about this. When those came against them and they knew they were going to smote them, the children of Israel, how many of them had hope? I think the devil used that, and they saw the enemies, and they know how great those enemies were. And now they're joining forces, and they're coming against them. And their idea is to smote them, is to slay them, is to destroy them, is to come about them. What do we see? I think there's many that got depressed, if you will. And when we look at the enemy that coming against us, if we don't look it in the right light, what happens to us? We get depressed. We get down. We look and say, there's no way to have victory. Now, they were going to have the enemy come against them because of what? Their own sin, right? Why do we sometimes face some of the depression, some of the oppression, some of the struggles we face? It's because of our own sin. Yeah, we take our sight off the Lord, and a lot of it has to do with because of our own self. We quench the spirit, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago, or last week, last Sunday, and we're going to kind of hit that a little bit this morning, and we're going to come into an area that I believe is a very crucial area this morning for many of our lives. Because the impact, and we're talking about this morning, is great, not just for ourselves, but for others as well. So we're going to be hitting some things this morning. And they come in, and we have this area, the attack. Now, we all have different areas in our lives we fight. But it involves a warfare that goes on. Now, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, right? But against what? What are principalities? Anyone know? Rulers, okay? Principalities, and what else? Wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against what? Okay, what's those powers? So the whole idea of that verse, talk about in Ephesians chapter 6, is we are in a spiritual warfare. It's not always a physical warfare. Now, the devil does use physical to attack spiritual. All right? Now, let me ask you just a question. Does the devil always do the attacking? Because the devil is not all-knowing. The devil is not omnipresent. But the devil uses what? His demons. His angels, if you will. The fallen angels, right? The demons, all right? And he uses those. Now, we generalize it and say it's the devil attacking. In a sense, it is, because the devil's equipped them and gave them and... What's that? Yeah. And it's still the devil, but it's not Satan himself, but he gives that the idea. And a lot of times, but this is what we do. Well, if it's not Satan attacking us, it's just one of his demons, then it's not that big a deal because we can handle that. No, the power that they have is very similar to the power that Satan himself has, and that can destroy us and attack us. Now, we're in this fight here. Now, look a little further here. He smote Israel and possessed the city of palm trees. Anyone know what the city of palm trees is? Go to Deuteronomy chapter 34, look at verse 3. Deuteronomy 34, verse 3. Anyone off the top of your head? You You could Google it if you wanted to. The city of palm trees. Jericho. Now that's interesting. Now look at this here. Someone have that? Go ahead and read Deuteronomy 34:3. Okay, the city of palm trees is Jericho. Now, yeah, so it's talking about the city, the palm tree, the valley of Jericho, that area. That's what it's referring to here. Even this area that is going to be destroyed, and they come against there, and he gathered the children of Ammon and Amalek, and went, smote Israel, and possessed the city of palm trees. And so that's the city of palm trees is talking about Jericho, the valley of Jericho, that whole area of Jericho. They possessed it. Now, it's interesting. Why would they not just say Jericho, the valley of Jericho here? Why would it? Yeah, so that's important to see. Tina, you had something else? So where they smote and then where they went and possessed, it would have been that valley, but it would have encamped even parts of the city of Jericho as well in that. So it would have been that whole area. So it's like this. We live in the valley, the Treasure Valley, right? Now in the Treasure Valley, we have Napa, we have Meridian and all that, Boise and Caldwell and all that, right? And so it's carrying that idea of that whole section there. Oh, Cuna, don't forget. There's a lot. But it's carrying that whole idea. So the whole idea is they possess that whole area. They possess that whole area there. And it's interesting because we know Jericho down the road, what takes place there, right? And that's a whole nother lesson that we could get into with Jericho there. But this is the area they possess. Anyone know why that would be? Why would they possess that area? Why would they possess that valley? Why would the enemy want that? Why would, look at it here, and why would it be recorded here? It went, smote Israel, and possessed the city of palm trees. Okay. Okay, good producing part of land. Do you think there's anything interesting about the location? That area was a gateway to Jerusalem. So I think, yeah, producing in that. But I also think it had to do with the location of this. Because now they could possess and set up their headquarters right in this gateway, right in this area. How would that help in the battles? How would that help with anything else that they're doing? So that goes back to what Tina said. It can limit the goods that go in. Now they set up their headquarters. They set up this in this region, this area. And then also, too, it's the location. But also, too, keep in mind the location of victory. Now this was the area of victory at one point. Now it's an area of defeat. Now I want you to think about that for a moment. How many times have we had victory before over an area, and then we had defeat over that area? And other times that we've had defeat, then we've had victory over the same area. Why? What makes a difference? Why does one time, and we hit this a little bit in the very beginning, but why does sometimes do we have victory and other times we have defeat over the exact same area that we've struggled with? Why can we have victory one time and defeat another, and vice versa? Anyone have a thought? Yeah. But we defeat because we know what works, but we don't do it. We hit that in the very beginning. And I think that is the key there. Look at verse 14. So what happens to Israel? What does Israel become to the king? Look at verse 14. Someone look at that. Read that for me. What does Israel become? Verse 14 of Exodus 3. What does Israel become? Look at that and see. What does it tell us there? So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. What happened now? They go from having freedom. Judges 3, 14. They go from having freedom. They go from having this to the place now that they've been smote. Land has been possessed. They've been restricted in things. And now 18 years, they're under the king. And they served the king. What does that mean, to serve? They became what to the king? They became slaves to the king. To work, to labor, to become a slave to. Now, is there a picture do you see? I see a picture. What happens when we don't do things God's way? What do we become a slave to? The world, and a slave to our own sin. How do we become a slave to our own sin? Yeah. You serve that debt. How else that you serve sin? Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I don't think any of you have ever been a slave before, have you? Maybe to your parents, right? At one time. Maybe you felt like a slave, right? To your parents, right? But what happens when you're a slave? What happens? You've studied it out. You've seen. Now, we know that there are some good slave owners, and we understand that. But on a typical, what happens to a slave? They're not their own. They don't have any life of their own. And what does sin do to us? We're supposed to have life, and life abundantly, right? But what happens to us when we're serving sin? We're a slave to sin. What does it do to our very essence, to our very person, ourselves? What does it do to us? Yeah. Now, Israel was redeemed to be what? Servants of who? Of God. You and I are redeemed to be servants of who? So what are we supposed to be? Who are we supposed to be serving? But what do we normally serve? Our flesh, ourselves, our sin. And we're supposed to be serving God. Look at me in verse 15. But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, the Lord raised up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Jerah, a Benjamite, a man left-handed, and by him the children of Israel sent a present unto Eglon, the king of Moab. But when the children of Israel cried, do you know one of my favorite words in the Bible is the word B-U-T, but. Because there's a lot of times it says, but God, but this. There's some wonderful thoughts there. That this is, they're facing this destruction. They're facing this. But God! They're going through this and they're dead in trespasses and sin. But God's mercy. But, and here it says, they were smoted, they were possessed, they had nothing, they were slaves. It looked pretty bleak for them, did it not? But look at that verse we just read, verse 15. But what happened? When the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. Do you know what's great that for us to consider? But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, even though they caused the pain that they're facing, even though they put themselves in the situation that they're in, even though they knew better, when they cried unto God, no matter how bleak it looked, they were able to cry unto the Lord. I believe this is a simple truth that we know. Do you have something to tell? But I believe this is a simple truth, but it's one that we struggle with. Because a lot of times when we are down and out, and we feel depressed and we feel down, we know we can cry unto the Lord. But what happens a lot of times? We don't even want to cry unto the Lord. Go ahead, Tanya. Yeah. Yeah, when God, even though not his people, and even though those things, when they cry, God is there and shows his love, his mercy. And it's interesting, they could cry unto the Lord, even though there's times we don't feel like crying to the Lord. What do we need to do? Cry to the Lord. You ever notice that? We know what we need to do, but we don't always feel we want to do it. Just like this, if you're struggling with depression, you're struggling with different things, what's the best thing to do? Be around other people, share things with people, have people pray for you. But what do we normally want to do? We want to be alone. We don't want anyone to know. We don't want to deal with that. Yeah, that's a good key right there. Yeah, we don't feel worthy. We don't feel like we deserve it. Yeah, or we don't want to be a burden to somebody. Very good. Good. Great thoughts. Great thoughts there. But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, what happened? The Lord said, well, sorry, you're not worthy. The Lord said, sorry, I'm too busy for you. Sorry, you're just going to have to deal with it. You made your bed, lie in it, right? Is that what the Lord said? What did the Lord do? But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord sent a deliverer. Did you see that? But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised them up a deliverer. Now, go ahead. Well, it does. It shows us. Yeah, as long as suffering, even though we do the same stuff over and over again, God is still there. And even though Israel kept going back in the same cycle, God was still there. Now, it says, and he raised up a deliverer. What does it mean, he raised up a deliverer? Anybody have a thought? He raised up a deliverer. Okay, he put in the mind of heart of a person to do something. He raised up. Because what did he do? He actually, that whole idea of raising up the deliverer is he handpicked who he was going to use for that circumstance to bring. It wasn't that someone just said, well, I guess no one else is going to do it. I'm going to do it. God had who he wanted. He raised up. he brought this person to. He laid on that person's heart what he wanted to do. And God directed that person to deliver Israel. Now, how does that apply to us? I want you to think about that for a moment. There's a couple applications I think we can glean from this. The one application is, I believe God has raised up people to help us, okay? I believe God has certain people that he is going to bring along our pathways to help us. Now, some of you, you could probably give illustrations of that. And God has put certain people, I can look back in my life, and I can look back and see how God brought certain individuals into my life. And if it wasn't for those individuals, I might have struggled differently, or I might not have had victory in those areas, or I might not be where I'm at today. Why? Because God has raised certain people up, but also God has raised you and I up to do the same for others. Did you know that? I'm glad there's people that come alongside me, but God has raised us up to come alongside them. Do you know God brings people across your paths every day for a reason and purpose? Now, this is humbling to me. All right? And this is convicting to me. Because what happens many times in our busy life? We have blinders on. And God brings people across us. And he's raised us up to be a help and a blessing and an influence to them and try to help them where they're struggling, try to get them on the path. But what do? We're tunnel vision. We're blinders on. And we're just seeing ourselves and where we're going. And we can, whew, go right past it. How many of you ever been driving with tunnel vision, blinded, and then someone else in the car said, did you notice that someone almost hit us? What? I didn't see that. Because you're so focused here. Or did you see that person that was going to walk in front of you? You're just, a lot of times we get so focused on what our problems are, what our life is, that we don't see what is going on. And God's brought people across our paths that were to be a help to. We're to be a deliverer, if you will. God has raised us up. God has not saved you to sit in a seat soaking sour. God has raised us up to be able to be used. God raised up this man to deliver Israel at this time. Now, God has put certain people at certain times in the life of Israel. And each of these individuals, if you look at them, are different, okay? Why does God not use the same type of people all the time? Because each circumstance needs someone different, right? Now, there's different ways of doing this. How many of you that had more than one child realized that each child's a little different? And those that even worked with children, even if you never had children, realize each child's a little different, right? And each child, you have to handle things a little different than that. Sometimes you have to be, with certain children, a little more firmer and a little more direct with, right? Others, you can have a conversation just like this and really never even have to raise your voice, never even have to break a sweat or get upset at all. You can just, and you get where you need to go. Other ones, you're ready to take your hands around their neck and squeeze. Now, none of you ever felt that way, huh? And you have to do certain ways. Nathaniel, you probably tested some patience along the way of life. I'm just going to leave that alone. And so it takes a little bit more, right? Am I right, though? All right. And it takes, but there's different ways. How many in school, you did better with certain type of teachers than you did with other type of teachers? You learn more under certain teachers than you did under other teachers. Because there's different ways. And I believe God uses, and that's why God equips us differently. Because how I handle things or how I'm going to deal with this could be what you need today. But the way that Dick handles things could be what you need tomorrow. And this whole idea is God has put us there. And I believe that's why, too, even in a family, I believe one of the reasons God has a husband and a wife is usually they handle things just a tad different, and they know how to work with things, and working together, you can come to a better thing. And some of your kids needs mama's little love, and some of them needs daddy's love in a different way. It handles that way, and it works, and it helps in that. God has put you in a place, no matter what place you're in, for a reason and a purpose. And we need to see how we can be helped. Let's look at this. We're almost out of time, but I want us just to finish this thought here. The Lord raised him up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Jerah, a Benjamite, a man left-handed. I want to end with this, and I ask you to do homework, please. I want you to do homework. What is significance? And we're not going to answer this today. I want you to look this up. What is the significance that it says that he was a son of Jerah, a Benjamite, number one? And what is the significance, a man left-handed? So I want you to do some homework. We're going to discuss that next week. So there's two things there. Why did it say where he's from? That's easier. But number two, why did it say he was a man left-handed? And so we're going to pick that up there and see why that plays a role in his being used of God to deliver. Did it matter where he's from? Did it matter that he's a left-handed man? I mean, why even put that in the scripture? There's a reason, though, isn't there? Because why would it be in scripture if we didn't need to know that? So leave that with you. Anybody have any thoughts? Besides that, anybody have any other thoughts about what we talked about? Because we'll discuss that next week there. So please, jot that down. Do some homework. Because it is some interesting thoughts as we look at that. All right. If not, no, any other thoughts besides on those? If not, let's close in prayer. Heavenly